Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. Hello, this is the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. My name is Wynn Greer. I'm the pastor of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas. That is just outside of Boone, North Carolina. If you are in the listening area, maybe you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to come and visit with us. We have services every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Sunday school for all ages, 11 a.m. our Sunday morning preaching worship service. We have a church website, mountlebanonbc.org. That's mtlebanonbc.org, that has directions, phone number, address, radio archives, sermon archives, all kinds of information on there. And so we'd love to invite you out to come and be with us at any time. We have a college ministry as well. We have a Sunday school class for the college age, and we always have some in there. So we have a lot of opportunities. But anyway, we're glad to be here today. We count it an honor and a privilege to come this way each and every week, expounding on the subject of liberty. Jesus Christ came to proclaim liberty. Isaiah 61, verses 1 through 3, the Bible says there about the Messiah, that he would, that the Spirit of the Lord would be upon him to proclaim liberty. And then in Luke chapter 4, verses 16 through 19, Jesus stood up in the temple and read out of Isaiah, what we would call chapter number 61. There he said to set at liberty them that are bruised. And then the Apostle Paul, this is one of my favorite verses on the subject of liberty. It says over there, Galatians 5 and 1, stand fast therefore in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. And then our verse we say every week when we come on the air, the first time you find the word liberty in the Bible is in Leviticus 25, verse number 10, where it says, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. And so we appreciate the doctrine of liberty that we find taught in the Bible. We appreciate this opportunity. We want to welcome all of our listeners right here on WATA, 1450 AM in Boone, North Carolina. And then on Saturdays, we want to welcome our listeners on WZAP in Bristol, Virginia, and also on 89.1 FM The Truth in Watertown, South Dakota. And so we wanted to welcome our radio broadcast and all of our listeners. If you're a regular listener, you know we have been studying on the subject of the United States Constitution. And we've been several weeks. I'd have to look back in my notes here, 9 or 10 now, studying about the Constitution. Today we're going to just begin to ease right over into the Bill of Rights. We're going to begin to look at the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments. Sometimes it's called that, but we commonly know the first 10 amendments as the Bill of Rights. We probably won't go through all 27 of them, but I do want to take some time on the radio broadcast and look at the Bill of Rights. Now, just want to summarize what we've been looking at so far. We said there's 7 institutions that are mentioned in the United States Constitution, and the first and most important of those is simply we the people. This is found in the preamble to the Constitution. The preamble, the very first paragraph, says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. That's where our title to our broadcast comes from, by the way. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, that is our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, right on down the line, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And so we have we the people. Now, in the summer of 1787, the framers of the Constitution came together with a job to do. They had been commissioned by the Continental Congress to come together and make amendments to the original Articles of Federation. Now, I just want to give sort of a historical outline of when these events took place. Most everybody knows that the Declaration of Independence was signed July 4th, 1776. Now, that was the Declaration of Independence. Those of you that know your history, you know that there was a war that followed that. Actually, it had already begun, but the American Revolutionary War. It took several years to win our independence from Great Britain. But by 1781, we had won our independence, and we had, as a nation, for our system of government, we were governed by the Articles of Confederation. The Articles of Confederation were ratified in 1781. The Articles of Confederation, they were very heavy on states' rights. They gave very little power or authority to the federal government. Our nation at that time was very close to, now this is a contradiction, but a system of anarchy. It'd be better to say it like this. The system we had was leading to anarchy. Anarchy is without government. The central government, the federal government, was so weak they could not do the very basic things that a government needs to be able to do. They could not regulate commerce between the states. There was no set system of money in the colonies or among the states. Some had gone to paper money. The treaties with other countries, there was no way to make treaties and trade with other countries. So the Articles of Confederation, there was a very, very weak federal government. Well, something had to be done because our nation was quickly slipping into a state of anarchy, which would have been the demise of it would have just undone the American Revolution. France was waiting in the wings. Spain was waiting in the wings. They wanted, they could have come in and taken over. We were very weak, militarily speaking. There'd been the American Revolution. So in 1787, the United States Constitution was framed. The framers did not do what they set out to do. Now, they came to Philadelphia in the summer of 1787 to amend. That was their job given to them by the Continental Congress, was to amend and strengthen the Articles of Confederation. But actually, what they did when they were done, they put forth a whole new form of government, a whole new form of government. After a while, they just seen that the Articles of Confederation, that they just needed to start all over again. And that is exactly what they did with the United States Constitution. Now, their appeal, when they were finished, was not to the Continental Congress. They didn't go back to Congress, who commissioned them to go and amend the Articles of Confederation. They did not go back to the Continental Congress and say, here's what we come up with. They did not go back to the state legislatures and say, this is what we come up with. They went back to, their appeal was to, we the people. Now, I want to read something from the end of the United States Constitution. Now, at the very end, after Article Number 7, it says, in convention, Monday, September 17th, 1787. I'm going through all this to show you the importance of we the people. This is why we the people is at the top, and not the Supreme Court, not the Congress, not the president, but we the people is at the top. And so they appealed back to the people. That's who they appealed to, not the Continental Congress, not the state legislators. They appealed directly to the people. So it says, in convention, Monday, September 17th, 1787. September 17th, by the way, is Constitution Day. Okay, it says present the states of, and it lists all the states that were present, and it says resolved that the preceding constitution be laid before the United States in Congress assembled, and that it is the opinion of this convention that it should afterwards be submitted to a convention of delegates chosen in each state by the people. So the committee made the recommendation to go back to the states, and that the states would choose a delegation by the people, or from the people, by the people thereof, under the recommendation of its legislature, for their assent and ratification. So we see that at the very end, when they got all said and done, and they're ready to put their names and ratify the United States Constitution, they make an appeal back to the people in the different states, that they would get delegates, and that these delegates would come and ratify the United States Constitution. And that is why we say that we the people are at the top. We the people in America, we have a government by the people, of the people. Sometimes you maybe have heard that. What does that mean? That's what it means. The people are sovereign. The people are over the government. The government representatives, those that are elected to office, they are to be the servants of the people, not the people, the servants of the elected representatives. You see, everything just about is turned upside down now in America as to the way it was originally intended to be. But we the people are at the top. The Constitution also talks about the militia. And we've said a great deal about the militia. The militia is simply this, an armed citizenry. That's the militia, the citizens. We the people, armed. That's what the militia is. The militia is not the army. It's not the navy. It's not the sheriff's office. It's not law enforcement. It is we the people. It is the people armed. That is the militia. That's where the draw of the militia would come from. Then we talked about the states, the individual states. Then we talked about the United States, all the states coming together and working together. And they do this through the federal government. They actually do this through Congress. Now, Congress is the fifth institution that we looked at. We have a representative form of government. We have the House of Representatives, and then we have the Senate. So there's two houses, and they're to work together to get things done and to be a check and balance on each other. So you have the Congress, then you have the President, then you have the Supreme Court, which we looked at last week. But there are seven articles in the Constitution, and each of these groups are addressed specifically. The Constitution is not a complicated document. If you look at it, keeping these groups in mind, and as you read the seven articles in the Constitution, you can pick them out very easily. They each have, they're described, they have duties, they have responsibilities, they have privileges. And so that's how we've sort of gone about the study of the Constitution. Now, at the conclusion of the Constitutional Convention, September 17th, 1787, there was still a great deal of work that had to be done. It wasn't just, okay, now we have a Constitution, we're going to live by this, abide by this, this is going to be the supreme law of the land. There was still a lot of work that had to be done. The Constitution still had to be ratified by 9 of the 13 states. Now, I did not read the states that were present. Now, if you know your states real good, and I read down through this list, can you pick out which state was not there? There's only 12 states that are mentioned. I'm going to read. And New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Mr. Hamilton from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Did you pick out the state that is absent? See, there's only 12 states that were present at the signing of the Constitutional Convention, September 17, 1787. The state that was absent, they didn't even send anybody to work on the Constitution, is the smallest state, and that was the state Rhode Island. Rhode Island was a holdout. Well, they're the smallest state. What's it going to benefit them to have a federal government? They were not even represented in the summer of 1787. Rhode Island was absent. They needed nine states in order to ratify and make it the supreme law of the land. And at this point in the history of the United States, we have a great debate begins to go on. And the debate at that time was a debate between the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist. Now, all this leads into the formation of the Bill of Rights. What good is the Constitution without the Bill of Rights? What good is the Constitution? You cannot have the Constitution or discuss the Constitution without the Declaration of Independence on one side. But then on the other side, what would we have if we did not have the Bill of Rights? These three things we look at, they go together. And so this is leading into where did the Bill of Rights come from? In our country, there's this debate between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. And I know that most of you, if you know anything about history, you have at least heard about the Federalist Papers. The Federalist Papers were published in New York City newspapers after the Constitutional Convention, and they were authored by Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay. John Jay was the first chief of the Supreme Court. And then on the other side, you also have the Anti-Federalist Papers. And so you have this great debate. Now, the way to remember the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, easy. I have to condense things and make them easy to remember and understand. But the Federalists, they were pro-Constitution. They were in favor of a stronger, more centralized federal government. That's what they were for. Alexander Hamilton was making the case, and John Jay making the case, James Madison making the case, and Alexander Hamilton published his papers under the surname Publius, P-U-B-L-I-U-S. And so the Federalist Papers, and they were published in the New York City newspapers. Then the Anti-Federalists, they were, you just think of Federalist, federal government. The Anti-Federalists, they were not so much for a strong, centralized federal government. It's not that they were anti-constitutionalists, but they were anti-centralized, powerful federal government. If you maybe you have noticed the absence of, for example, Patrick Henry, you don't read about much about Patrick Henry after the American Revolutionary War. He was very active before and during the Declaration of Independence. Remember, he made the great speech, "Give me liberty or give me death." You talk about a patriot in Patrick Henry. He was very active during the American Revolutionary War, but he is absent at the Constitutional Convention. Patrick Henry was not there. Well, he was anti-federalist. He was against what they were doing. He was against a strong, powerful central government. He was very pro states' rights, and he was for the sovereignty of the states. Now, he didn't have anything to do in the federal government. He never ran for president. He was never vice president. He was never involved with the Supreme Court or anything like that. He became governor of his state later on, the state of Virginia. He was very active in the state of Virginia. He was an anti-federalist. George Clinton at that time was the governor of the state of New York. He was anti-federalist. So it's interesting, you know, they published these papers in New York City. Of course, and you may remember this, you may not, but the first capital of the federal government was actually in New York, and then moved to Philadelphia, and then moved to Washington, D.C. And so the governor of the state where the seat of the federal government was, the governor of that state, he was very anti-federal government. And so he was a anti-federalist. So you had this great debate going on in America at that time period. And you've got to remember that this powerful centralized government that the Constitution was promoting, they had just come out from under a powerful centralized government. They had just freed themselves from Britain and from King George. So you had this anti-centralized government, anti-powerful government sentiment in the land. And so you had the Federalists and the anti-Federalists. I have spent some time on that, but that's important to remember in the formation of our country. You had, even then, you had big government, you had people that were promoting big government, and you had people that were promoting a very small, limited government. And so this is not something, when we hear about that on the news today, this is not something that's new. This is something that has been around ever since the establishment of the United States of America as we know it today. Now, you need to remember this. The great contribution of the anti-federalist promoters is the Bill of Rights. Everything I'm saying today is leading into a study on the Bill of Rights, why we have them, where they came from. The great contribution of the anti-federalists is the Bill of Rights. The Federalists gave us the Constitution. They were in favor of a stronger federal government. So the anti-federalists, they gave us the Bill of Rights. Very important. I'm thankful we have both of them. They keep one another in check. Now, I will not have time to get into it today, but we will especially see the contribution of the Baptist people. The Baptist people, they were not anti-constitutional, but they were very pro-Bill of Rights. They wanted to make sure, before they sent a delegate from their state, and especially we're going to look at the state of Virginia and a Baptist preacher named John Leland, they wanted to make sure that there was a provision in there for religious freedom. Do you realize that the reason we have a First Amendment that secures, promotes that the first thing in there is religious freedom is because there was a time in America where you did not have religious freedom. You could be persecuted for not being a member of the state church, and each colony except Rhode Island had a state church. Here in North Carolina, it was the Anglican or the Episcopalian. And up north, you had the Congregationalist churches, and you could be put in prison. You could be fined. Your land could be taken away. So the Baptist people, they wanted to make sure there was a provision for religious freedom, and we have the First Amendment. We'll get into all of that. But that's what they were concerned about. Not so concerned about what the Constitution did say, but they were concerned about what it did not say. And they wanted to make sure. They wanted some more assurances for their rights. Now, this is leading into the Bill of Rights. I want to read something that, if you have a copy of the first 10 amendments, when Congress came back together, and before the amendments, there's a page there that is sort of an introductory, and you very rarely hear anything about this. You hear about the Bill of Rights, but there's a couple of paragraphs that explains why we have the Bill of Rights. And I want to read just a little bit from this in the time we have remaining and just make a few comments. Now, this is the, what we might say, the preamble to the amendments or to the Bill of Rights. And it says Congress of the United States begun and held at the city of New York on Wednesday, the 4th of March, 1789. So here we are a couple of years later after the September 17, 1787, we come to March of 1789. And it says this, the conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added and is extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Now, that's pretty wordy. But if you read anything from the 1700s, it was all wordy. In fact, we've been studying in church history on Thursday nights, and some of the titles to the messages, the sermons that you read from that, they would go on for two or three sentences. I mean, they things were just wordy. Well, they're still wordy in the as far as the government concerns, but there's just a few things I wanted to point out from this little introduction to the Bill of Rights. Notice that they said, and I'm going to shorten this, what were they saying? The conventions. Now, they had sent out and they said the from 1787, from the Constitutional Convention, they sent out to all the states and they said, you get delegates, you send these delegates, and nine states have to agree and ratify the Constitution. Well, these states, they had some concerns. They had some questions, so they come back. Do you know, originally the states came back with over 70 amendments that they wanted or articles that they wanted added to the Constitution. These were revised and summarized and brought down to 12, and it ended up just being 10. There's 10 amendments. The first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights, but they had a lot of questions that they come back with. Well, the conventions expressed a desire to prevent abuse of powers. I just read that from the introduction here. To prevent abuse of powers. So the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, is to prevent abuse of powers. Do we have any abuse of powers today? We sure do. We could give many, many examples of the government abusing its powers. But the Bill of Rights is to keep them from abusing their power. Well, they also said this. Our time is quickly getting gone today. They desired further declaratory and restrictive clauses. What they wanted, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, it is there not to tell the government all the things that they can do, but to restrict, to limit the federal government. The Constitution does that. It limits the powers of government. Maybe you're familiar with what is going on right now before the Supreme Court. Hobby Lobby, well, that's a big store, and their case is gone before the Supreme Court, and it has to do with, you know, they have some, they're a Christian family. This is their business, and they don't want to be involved in anything to do with abortion or birth control. And so this is going before the Supreme Court. If the government was not in the business of health care, this would not even be going before the Supreme Court. But the government is in a business that it has no constitutional authority to be there. And so then I'll say it like this. When the government becomes all things to all people, you're going to have a lot of problems. We have unlimited government. And government is trying to be all things to all people. And so we have all these constitutional concerns and questions. They have gone outside the limits and restrictive limits of the Constitution. Well, they said something else in this. They said, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficial ends of this institution. They were concerned about the public confidence. They knew it wouldn't work if they didn't have the public confidence. The public confidence is important, by the way. The reason that we had an American Revolutionary War is because the public lost confidence in their government. These things are very, very important. Well, our time is quickly come and gone. We do thank you for listening in today to the Blessings of Liberty. We hope you have a great day, and God bless you is our prayer.